I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we're starting the show with an exclusive story about a young woman who was robbed of her dream of becoming a social worker because she challenged radical gender ideology.
Just for something like that to be taken away from you without any care in the world.
Plus, amid a spike in juvenile crime, a local councilman is once again calling for an audit of the Juvenile Restorative Pathways Program. And finally, a bill that would bring an end to DEI. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We have an exclusive story for you today that is just about one of the most frustrating stories we've ever covered on the show. If you've watched the show long enough, you know that that's saying a lot because we cover a lot of frustrating stories about the state of Washington nationally and really some of these woke ideologies that have thrown common sense out the window. We're going to introduce you to start the show to a young woman named Claudia Arias. Claudia should have graduated from the University of Tacoma this past weekend, but she didn't. It was ripped away from her at the very last minute because she dared to question an aspect of radical gender ideology. I hope that after you hear Claudia's story, her story will do for you what it's done for me since we first spoke to her behind the scenes last week. And that is really reinvigorate me and recommit me to the cause of common sense. And I hope it'll do the same for you. And it'll also encourage you and give you one more reason and give you the bravery that each and every one of us who has common sense needs to speak out about things that aren't right, regardless of what we might have at stake. So let me tell you a little bit about Claudia Arias. So Claudia has a remarkable backstory. And she decided, because of some of her own personal experiences in life, that she wanted to go to school to become a social worker.
I've been interested since I was pretty young. I was a teen parent, and being a teen parent kind of gave me that feel of wanting to help others. Now, I didn't have that much help when I was younger, so I wanted to make sure that I'm looking out for other people that don't have what I didn't have when I was younger. So I want to make sure that I'm helping people in general.
Yeah, you also have a really fascinating background. You fled the Civil War in El Salvador?
I did. I arrived, I think it was when I was about 3 years old with my mom. It's been a rough ride since then.
It's been a rough ride, but again, she wanted to take this personal experience of hers, being a teen mom as a child with her mother fleeing El Salvador, and she wanted to use that for good and go to school for social work and try to give back to other people who are going through difficult experiences in their life and young people. What a noble cause that is. So Claudia, because of some of the things she had gone through, you know, being a young mom, it took her a long time to work toward her degree. She had spent more than a decade trying to get her social worker degree. But last spring, she was almost there. She was almost there. She was going through a couple remaining classes. She had a couple last assignments that she needed to do, including an assignment that was given to her in the spring of 2023 to do what the professor called a zine, which is just a short magazine, essentially, that you would put together a short magazine on a topic of your choosing. And Claudia decided, when trying to figure out what this topic would be, that she really wanted to do something about women's rights.
My first thought was, you know, women's rights. I think women fought for their rights for quite a bit of time. And I thought, you know, this is very important. So that's what I started searching for, women's rights. And then as I came across more information, I started, it was a basic assignment, copy and paste information from articles or resources that I had found. So none of it was really in my own words. It was just copied and pasted from court documents and articles and resources.
Gotcha. And that was the assignment, to take stuff from other sources and compile it.
Yes.
Yeah, so women's rights, nothing controversial about that. So she proceeds trying to put this zine together, which is exactly as it sounds, just a short mini sort of magazine. And she puts together this really kind of crudely put together draft copy because there's an opportunity to show a draft to the professor, to get a little bit of feedback from the professor, and then to proceed and put together your final assignment. So Claudia sent us photos of this draft zine that she'd put together on women's rights. And as she looked into this issue, she started honing in even further on the issue of women's rights behind bars. Again, that doesn't sound like a very controversial topic at all. So here's again just a picture of the draft zine for those who are watching the show. The cover says women's rights, and then it gets into the dangers some women face while incarcerated. It gets into PREA, which, if you're not familiar with PREA, is the Prison Rape Elimination Act. Now, sexual assault behind bars is unfortunately very common, and that's why PREA exists. It's supposed to basically set standards for detention facilities and prisons to try to do what they can to prevent both male and female inmates from being raped. Again, nothing really controversial here. So women's rights, even more specifically, she wants to do her assignment on women's rights behind bars. But here's where Claudia made a mistake, at least in the eyes of the woke staff at the University of Tacoma. Claudia decided to hone the topic in even further and set her sights on the issue of female inmates being raped by transgender inmates who they were cellmates with.
I came across a video that talked about women being raped in prison. And I thought that is just an unjust situation that these women have been put in. And I thought, this is not okay. This is happening in our society. And I don't think that it is okay. And I think that people should advocate for these women. They're in danger and it is not safe for them. And I think they have the right to speak up and we should be there to advocate for them.
So the video that she came across, which sparked her interest in that topic specifically, was a video from James O'Keefe. We played this report on the show before, where James O'Keefe did an investigative report into what was happening in Washington State women's prisons when it came to biological men being put in the same cells as women because they said that they were transgender. Here's a clip from that James O'Keefe report.
Anything against them, I just don't want to sleep in there with them. We don't have a voice, we don't have a leg to stand on. Anytime we voice these types of things, we are met with ridicule, targeting, bias, punishment, solitary confinement.
So Claudia decided she was going to share in this assignment that was now on women's rights to feel safe, even while incarcerated. She was going to include this report from James O'Keefe and the voices of female inmates saying some of the stuff that was happening to them or was happening to other women behind bars. And so again, in this draft assignment that she showed the professor, she actually included a link to the James O'Keefe report and wrote, footage inside Washington State's Correctional Center for Women shows a distressed inmate sounding off about the prison's transgender-friendly policy. As a result of the policy, violent male offenders are put in positions where they can take advantage of female inmates, including in the same cell. When she presented this draft assignment to her professor at the University of Tacoma, according to Claudia, her professor absolutely lost it.
And the professor immediately after she saw the scene, she just got up, extended her arm and said, "You're targeting transgender," and covered her mouth, and her face looked flushed, walked to her podium. Another student asked her, "Can I get your help?" And the professor said, "Not right now, not right now." So I didn't know what to do. I said, "I don't understand. What did I do wrong? What happened here?" And I didn't get any explanation at the moment. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. And I kept on saying, "I don't understand. What did I do wrong? I didn't say anything. I didn't do anything." Like, this is on, I just couldn't understand what had happened. I felt confused. I felt frustrated.
She just said she tried to talk to the professor. Professor didn't want to hear it. She ends up packing up her stuff, leaving class, trying to contact the professor later, saying, "Hey, can I maybe schedule office hours with you to talk about what happened. The professor kept saying no. And I would also say that in this draft assignment, which again, it's just a draft assignment on a very legitimate topic, had the professor bothered to continue to read into it, the professor would have seen that Claudia Arias isn't transphobic. I mean, in this very assignment, she wrote that, this is a quote, all male prisoners as well as those who identify as transgender have the right to be safe in prison, and talks about some people who believe that not providing transgender medical care for an inmate who's incarcerated amounts to cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment. So she goes into different sides of this issue. But this professor, so ideologically triggered, was absolutely not having it. So again, Claudia attempts to talk through it with the professor like an adult. That isn't successful. But the professor ends up sending her an email saying that she violated professional standards for a social worker or someone who wants to go into social work. So shortly after Claudia got that email from the professor, she got another email from the university.
I received another email from the Professional Standards Committee minutes after I had scheduled an appointment with the chair of the department.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what the Professional Standards Committee was. I have never been expelled or disciplined in any way from of the 14 plus years that I've been in school. Never had I experienced anything like this.
Yeah. But because of this, and because of the professor's anger that she would dare do a report on some of the dangers to women who are incarcerated, including being housed with biological men, Claudia Arias winds up in front of the University of Tacoma's Ethics Committee to try to explain herself. And after this hearing that she got, which was a total sham, they ended up sending her a letter telling her what she had to do to make it right, what she had to do to stay in the social worker program. She had to write two essays, essentially admitting that she's a terrible transphobe and that she did something wrong. The first essay, it said you'd have to write about a social worker's responsibility to trans individuals. And for the second essay, she would have to write about ethical and professional behavior and communication. And the letter was horrible. I mean, basically saying that you need to learn, you need to be self-reflected, you need to grow, you have a duty of a certain level of care if you want to be a social worker to transgender patients. So you need to write these two essays, one on your commitment to trans individuals, the second on ethical and professional behavior and communication. And I asked Claudia, well, what did they say? How did you behave unprofessionally? Is there something that happened behind the scenes where that was also part of what your punishment was supposed to be? Not only write an essay about your duty to care for transgender patients, but also about behaving professionally. And she said the only thing that she could think about is when she had a meeting with the head of the program, she inadvertently, apparently, you know, news to her, had been misgendering the professor who lost it about the draft assignment.
The chair of the department didn't allow me to speak freely. Every time I would speak and I would say her or she would immediately correct me and tilt her head and say they, them. I felt she was patronizing me. I felt uncomfortable. I felt alone. I didn't know what to do.
So here she is in this high pressure situation, head of the department, trying to explain, hey, this is what happened. I did this draft assignment. Here's what it was about. The professor lost her mind. And the chair of the department's going, they, them. It gives you some insight into how hostile and ideological this situation was, and also why the professor, who apparently identifies as they, them, would have reacted in the way they did to a report about transgender inmates raping women, female inmates in Washington State's prison system. So she was lost, confused, didn't know what to do, you know, had this basically dictate saying, hey, if you want to continue to be in our program, you're going to have to write these two essays admitting that you're a horrible person and a transphobe. And one thing that Claudia Arias knew for sure she was not going to do is write those essays. You opted not to write those essays. Why?
I opted not to write those essays because they never answered any of the questions that I had asked them. They gave me the pushback, reflect on myself type of response. And I felt like I had no support whatsoever from anyone in the university. Not the advocates, not the professors, not the chair of the department, no one. No one provided any support whatsoever. And I thought, if I write these essays, there's nothing telling me that they're not going to use it against me.
So she didn't write them. And look, what they were accusing her of was unreal. Think about that. A legitimate situation involving women and women's safety behind bars, being housed with biological men, examples of in instances of rape or fear. That's what she wanted to write about. And she ends up before an ethics committee that tells her that what she did didn't align with social workers' professional values regarding gender inclusive of trans individuals. Despite writing in a report, trans individuals behind bars have a right to feel safe too. But that didn't matter. She'd gone too far, at least in the eyes of the professor who goes by they, them. So Claudia should have graduated this past Friday after more than a decade of work trying to become a social worker. Her whole extensive life history, everything she's been through, she didn't get to graduate this past Friday. They took it all away from her.
They dropped me from the program. They dropped me from my first gen student program. They dropped me from everything, from being on the dean's list 3 to 4 times. They dropped me from everything on December 8th. And they basically ripped it away from me just like that. They, without any care whatsoever. I only had 4 classes left.
Wow.
And 4 classes left, and they were only practicum. I was ahead of other students because I had transferred from a different university to this university in Washington. So I only had 4 classes. And graduation is this Friday. And they took it away from me.
So you would have been graduating this Friday.
This Friday, I would have been graduating. And to think that, you know, I struggled so much, endless sleepless nights. I mean, you know what it's like to go to school and study and work so hard for it. Time away from your family, you know, time away from things, you know, and it's like you're wanting to reach a goal. And then for somebody just to yank it away from you, just like that.
So you have sought legal counsel with someone our viewers will be familiar with, Joan Mell. What is your goal with that?
My goal with that is that this does not happen to any other student, whether they're younger or whether they're older. Nobody really other than my husband and close friends knows what I have been through. What this has done to me, I worked so hard for it. And just for something like that to be taken away from you without any care in the world, for something that the professor could have had a better approach or better ways of communicating, just to take it away, it's very unfair. So my goal with this is for this not to happen to any other student. I know that graduating on Friday, it's not going to happen as of right now for me, but that is my main goal. I don't want anyone to go through what I went through. And I think that this is something that I've had my entire life. I want to see people advance in life. I want to see people have opportunities. I want to see people move forward. It makes me happy.
God.
But they took that happiness away from me. But it's okay. I'm still here at heart, and I'm going to keep moving forward to helping people as much as I can.
Shameful. Absolutely shameful. Of UW-Tacoma. Who knew there could be such consequences for sticking up for women who are being raped, all in the name of radical gender ideology. It has to stop. It has to end. I am proud of Claudia for sticking up for herself, for not writing some stupid essays admitting she's a transphobe when she's not, just in order to keep on this path. I'm proud of her for now seeking legal action against the University of Washington Tacoma, because someone needs to hold them accountable for this and to make sure, like she said, that it doesn't happen to someone else. I will note, Nicole reached out to the University of Washington Tacoma for comment on some of the things that Claudia says were happening behind the scenes. You know, certainly Claudia provided us with all the letters and email exchanges and all of that, but we wanted UW-Tacoma to have an opportunity to respond. Their director of communications, John Burkhart, sent us this email. Not a surprise. He says, due to federal laws meant to protect students' rights to privacy, the university can't comment on specific cases involving student academic records. In general, the UW-Tacoma social work program is designed in partnership with national professional organizations, and among other academic requirements, students entering the program must fully engage in and meet the standards, values, and ethics of the profession. Students who do not meet the standards of a particular academic program may be dropped from that program. However, they remain enrolled in the university and are free to pursue other programs or majors. Yeah, after 10 years trying to become a social worker. Oh, well, you know, she's just dropped from the social worker program, but she's free to pursue other programs or majors. So basically, she's free to start all over. Either she can go to another school and try to finish her social worker degree there, or she can just, oh, just as easy as that. Yeah, let me stay at the school that did this to me and pursue another program or major entirely. Absurd. Shame on UW-Tacoma. If you're giving them money, take it away now. Don't give them a freaking dime until they admit what they did and until they take accountability for it. It is time to de-woke our institutions. The fact that you could have someone like Claudia, who went through all of these experiences in her life that make her perfectly suited to become a social worker, you know, fleeing from a third world country as a child, becoming a teen parent. I mean, that's someone who has just so much empathy and knowledge and understanding to provide other human beings, taken from her because she dared to speak out about biological men, prison inmates, being housed in the same cell as biological women. It's crazy. And it's in keeping with the state of Washington, too. The state of Washington hides records on transgender inmates and what they've done or accused of doing. You're not allowed to question it at all. You're not allowed to look into it. You're not allowed to investigate it. And apparently, you're not allowed to talk about it in a draft assignment in a social worker course. Just insane stuff. We cannot get on the right path as a country until our educational institutions stop pushing their extreme ideologies on kids as young as elementary and up through college. I will say on this note today, some breaking news that I think is a wonderful step forward, that the president of the University of Washington announces that she is going to be stepping down in June of 2025, Anna Marie Cossey. Now, I think she should be fired or at least resign effective immediately for her horrible handling of the anti-Semitic protests that happened on the campus of the University of Washington for weeks on end. Now, whether this is a result, whether she's deciding to leave that post after a decade because of blowback, pushback, because people are pulling money from the university, I hope that's why. I hope that's why she feels the need to leave. And maybe that's an indication that financially, that's how you get them. I guarantee that the University of Washington, the Seattle campus, was facing monetary consequences from donors for allowing the anti-Semitism to flourish on campus, for allowing a fringe group of some students and outsiders to take over the campus for weeks. So maybe that's what we have to do. And maybe now we have to extend it to the University of Washington Tacoma to rip at the last minute the ability of a young woman who has worked a decade to become a social worker to enter a profession like social work. How many young people these days want to do something like that anymore? They all want to be freaking influencers. I mean, I say that as we do a podcast where I'm essentially a glorified influencer. They want to be influencers or do something like that. She wants to help people. going through years of work, not to mention all the classes she already paid for up to that point. And for what? And that's the kind of person, because of a radical ideology that has clearly infiltrated the University of Washington, Tacoma. Because of that, this young woman, Claudia Arias, at least not through them, can't go on to help people in the field of social work. Absolutely shameful. And we're not going to let this go. I mentioned Joan Mell. We've had on the show a couple times. She's taken on public records cases. She's also representing one of the former Tacoma police officers acquitted of murder in his claims against the city of Tacoma and the state of Washington. Joan Mell has taken on this case. We love Joan Mell. I told you when we first met Joan Mell, I was like, Joan, I feel like you're my best friend, because she just cares. She understands. She has common sense. She's sane, and she's willing to stick up for people, to do what's right, put herself out there. And so we appreciate her taking up Claudia's case. Unreal. Can't wait to hear you guys' comments on this one. All right, I've talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. I love it. I posted a picture the other day, a side-by-side of my before and after, down 40 pounds. And immediately in the comments, there were people like, oh, I'm down 60 pounds on the program. I'm down 50 pounds on the program. I'm down 40 pounds on the program. I love hearing that. I love hearing that you guys have also found success on the program, because I happen to think it's an easy program to follow. I mean, it's not magic, right? It's 60 days of really, really hard work. I did put a lot of work in those 60 days. I lost almost 30 pounds in the first 60 days. But after that, you make some simple lifestyle changes that allow you to live your life, you know, do vacations, barbecues in the summer, whatever it is, but make sure that you stay on track without feeling like you're on a lifelong diet. So if you've been seeing, you know, or hearing me talk about Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, just start here. Start by scheduling a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. Totally free. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Ask any questions you have, because not every weight loss program is right for every person. So you need to make sure you get all your questions answered before you commit to it. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right, so we're talking about juvenile crime. And when I say juvenile crime, I mean, obviously a juvenile is anyone under the age of 18, but we also have an awful lot of gang activity happening among 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 21, 22, 23. To me, that's not a juvenile, but it is a young person who I believe there's still time to try to get them on the right path, you know, and the younger that we can do that, certainly the better. So there was a story, obviously there was two shootings at schools in the news recently. One because there was a sentencing, a 14-year-old killed a fellow student at a Seattle school. And then there was a 17-year-old, I believe it was, who was shot trying to break up a fight outside another Seattle school. And then last night, this is from Como News. Jeremy Harris at Como posted this. Watch this crazy shooting out on 101st and Aurora Ave. Yeah, like a movie shootout. But unfortunately, this is real life. And this is real life in Seattle. One of the shooters was apparently equipped with an auto sear. That's when you hear just the spraying of bullets all over the street. Neighbors are obviously livid, saying we shouldn't be living like this. Now, I'm not going to make assumptions about the suspects here, but I'll say from the ones I could see visually on camera, they look pretty young. They look like young black men. And you don't have full-on shootouts in the street unless you're involved in some sort of gang activity. So that's obviously what's happening here. Now, this is bringing all these stories collectively, or bringing renewed attention to the failures in our juvenile justice program, as it should. You've got people like Dow Constantine. Oh, we're going to end youth detention by 2023 or 2025? I mean, just a pipe dream. Oh, we're going to close down the youth jail. Like, where are you going to put the youth murderers? What are you going to do? Just, you know, sanity goes out the window to score political points with a small segment of the far left that wants to decriminalize things, doesn't want young people to be incarcerated, even though young people can commit just as heinous of crimes as old people. So King County Councilman Reagan Dunn, he had previously requested an audit of something. It's a youth diversion program. It's called Juvenile Restorative Community Pathways. and they were denied. He didn't, you know, he asked for an audit of it to see how it was doing, the success rate of that program and all of that. No, we're not going to do that. Well, now there's all these headlines that are coming out more and more by the day. Nicole just went and compiled a couple of them. We could have done hundreds of them that talk not only about juvenile crime, but also about, you know, the Juvenile Restorative Justice Pathways Program. King County's juvenile diversion programs are a mess. Time for a reset. That's from the Seattle Times. KUOW, controversial county effort to divert youth criminal cases to community groups, isn't meeting its goals. Also, KUOW, can you get a more liberal, more progressive entity than that? King County gave millions to no new youth jail activists to help kids and then looked away. Yeah, so even the progressive outlets see that our handling of juvenile offenders is ridiculous. It's a dereliction of duty. It's leading to more crime and more death, and it's sending these kids down a spiral that will be almost impossible to get them out of. Because when you fail to hold them accountable and get them on the right path early on, they're just going to do more serious things. And then they're going to get in so deep where they kill someone, for instance, and then their life is ruined forever. And then you've missed out on the opportunity. So, King County Councilman Reagan Dunn, let's try this again. Once again, asking for an audit of the King County Juvenile Restorative Community Pathways Program. And he is pointing to a specific case involving someone who was diverted into the program and then wound up killing another human being. He wrote, on May 18th, 2024, a juvenile shot a woman to death in Shoreline after he threatened two teenage girls with a gun and the victim attempted to intervene. While this juvenile had no official criminal history, charging documents revealed to the public that this juvenile had previously, in 2021, been arrested for brandishing a gun at school and was sent to the Diversion Program Restorative Community Pathways. It is only through court filings that we learned that this juvenile offender never engaged in that program, but was also not sent to an alternative diversion program or charged with a crime. This is insane. So it's like, brandished a gun. Oh, let's put him to juvenile pathways. Ah, he didn't want to do that. So they're just like, okay, no big deal. Reagan Dunn goes on to write in this letter, this alarming situation not only highlights the tragedy that can occur when the criminal justice system fails to provide meaningful intervention in juvenile cases, but it also points to loopholes within our juvenile justice system, specifically within restorative community pathways, that fail to deliver meaningful interventions for juvenile offenders. There desperately needs to be improved transparency, accountability, and oversight of this controversial program. To this end, I am formally requesting that you perform an audit of restorative community pathways to bring to light the systemic deficiencies that have led to such tragedies as the one previously described. How is this controversial? How is asking for an audit of any government program controversial? We should be doing that routinely anyway. Look at all our homelessness programs that have squandered billions of dollars, and we have a worse homelessness system than we've ever had before. And this is not the first time that Reagan Dunn has asked for and not received an audit on a program that so clearly needs one. Remember, he was on the show with us a couple weeks ago saying that we need to have an audit of the justice for all housing people who bail out delinquent tenants, housing justice project. You think he's going to get an audit? No, of course not. He's a Republican, so he can't. He's just doing it for political reasons. No, people are dying. People are abusing taxpayer funds. They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Programs are a complete failure. Maybe we should look at them and see if they can be fixed, if they can be made to be more effective, or if we just need to defund them and try something else. So in response to Reagan Dunn once again requesting an audit of this program, the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office proactively released some data on their outcomes with the juvenile community pathways program to date. And I'll say, just this amount of data, it's not good. I appreciate them proactively releasing it. Hats off to Casey McNorthney, who's the public information officer with the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office, like the one of the only good public information officers who exists out there, because he's a former journalist. So it says, as of June 3rd, 889 total referrals and cases to the Community Pathways Program. Of those, 324 returned to the prosecuting attorney's office because Community Pathways was unable to locate the youth. What? What? So like almost half of the 900 referrals where you've got a juvenile who's committed a crime and you say, okay, we're going to put you into community pathways. They didn't do the program because you couldn't find them? How can you not find a juvenile offender? You don't have information for their parents? You don't have an address? How is that possible? And then it says, of the 324, so they don't participate in the Community Pathways program, so okay, we're going to kick that case back to the prosecutor's office. I guess we'll just have to do it the old-fashioned way, right? If they don't want to participate in our diversion program, well, then we'll prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law, right? 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 No, of course not. Of the 324, so 72 of them were filed into juvenile court and criminally prosecuted. Just 74. 91 weren't filed at all. The most common reason for not filing is that the case amounted to a standalone misdemeanor offense, and at least 6 to 12 months had passed since the incident, and there were no new crimes committed by this juvenile. So you're telling me that in 91 cases where the juvenile just didn't participate in the community pathways program that you were offering them as a chance, you were doing something good for them. They didn't participate. So it was kicked back to the prosecutor's office. And in 91 of those cases, you just threw your hands up and said, nah, it's not a big deal. It's just a standalone misdemeanor. They haven't done anything else bad in 6 to 12 months. So why prosecute them? Well, you prosecute them because the next crime they commit could be murder. And then you won't be able to ignore it. And then they're going to be in prison for life, or at least until their 21st birthday. It says 8 of the cases were re-diverted to juvenile court services for another attempt at engagement. Couldn't get them the first time. Let's try again. And then 153 of them, half of them are still under review. Trying to figure out, and how many of those do you think are going to end in prosecution? If we're going by the current numbers, maybe half? Maybe half? It says, how many referred juveniles have completed the program? This is also critical information, because remember, about 900 referrals into the program, about 400, 500 of them actually started on the path of the program. Okay, so what was the completion rate? Like, are these juveniles now A-plus students, doing great, like no new offenses? It says the data is tracked and reported by DCHS. They would be the department best suited to answer this question. However, to get a sense of completion rates, their Q1 report for 2024 discusses this. Of the 69 youth referred by the PAO in that period, 46 completed the program, 67%. So they're talking about the 69 that they referred. But again, remember, 900 or so were referred. Only 400 to 500 started on the program. So you're telling me right now we only have data for 46 of them to say they completed the program. And it's also one of the big fundamental failures of government when you look at diversion programs, for instance. No follow-through. No coordination between agencies. So again, you know, this data is tracked and reported by DCHS. They would be the department best suited to answer this question. Any government entity involved in that program or referring kids to that program should have that information like this. They should be able to track it. Everyone should have the same information so they can gauge how successful the program is. This is similar to the homeless industrial complex and some of the shortcomings on that and where things fall apart. You know, you got one service provider who goes and gets them off the street into emergency housing, emergency shelter. They don't know what happens to them after that. Then you might have someone who takes someone from emergency shelter, gets them into a tiny house. They don't know what happens to them after that. They don't know if they wound up back on the streets and then another service provider is doing it all over again. You know, one service provider gets them connected to drug and mental health treatment. They don't even know if they go. Wash their hands of it. Do it again. No coordination, no connection, no desire to know whether the program is effective, whether it is meeting the bar that any program like this in the juvenile justice system should have, which is balancing the needs of the public to feel safe and protected, the demand that there is a punishment for crimes, and yes, the need to make sure that young people have a chance to get on the right path before things go so far off track that there's no coming back. This is clearly not doing that. Reagan Dunn has again asked for an audit, and now would be a damn good time to do one. All right, coming up next, a Greek mascot, a Greek god mural at a local school has been taken down. Nicole, do you want to guess why?
Well, I know
only
why.
Be two things.
COVID?
Probably something to do with it, because it's racist. We'll get to that coming up next. First, if you are planning for retirement, as I hope all of you are, if you're getting close to it especially, you need to make sure that you know how inflation is going to impact your ability to retire in the way that you want. I mean, inflation is a huge deal. You've set aside and saved all this money, but inflation has increased the price of everything. So are you going to be able to have the retirement that you hope and dream of? Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital are having another one of their free Know Your Risk webinars coming up June 27th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. But this one is going to be specifically focused on inflation. They had an inflation one a couple weeks ago. It was so popular. They're like, we need to do two of them. So you can sign up for free. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. It's super easy. The little pop-up just comes up on screen and you can say sign up. No obligation. Completely free. You're going to learn a lot about how inflation can impact the quality of your retirement. So KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Again, that's happening June 27th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed past performance, doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244, go to knowyourriskradio.com. I almost pulled an Anchorman, Nicole. I was like, going to read that, and I almost read disclaimer, must read. But I stopped myself, so that's why I was giggling a little bit. All right, a mural of a school mascot of a Greek god has been taken down. Because apparently it's racist. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right, this is the headline from our friend Jason Rance over at MyNorthwest.com. School district rejected. I can't. Why is it like this? Why is the world like this? School district rejected white supremacist Thor mural for not being inclusive enough. The senior class at Mountain View High School in Vancouver, Washington, was excited about their senior gift, a mural of their unofficial mascot, Thor. But just when they thought the project was greenlit, students exclusively told the Jason Rance Show on KTTH that the school district's equity office was concerned because the mural represents white supremacy and wasn't gender or racially inclusive enough because Thor is a white dude. So like, what do you want? What do you want? An Evergreen Public Schools district administrator sent an email to the students involved in designing the mural. Students were asked if the senior class surveyed students about their thoughts on the mural and then reminded them that, quote, we are a system that strives for inclusive representation and our Title IX and gender inclusive schools commitments obligate us to create a neutral and diverse representation of the Thunder. A neutral and diverse representation of Thunder. So that must be their school mascot, the Thunder. And so they wanted Thor, which is kind of clever and it makes a lot of sense.
I guess it's an unofficial mascot as yeah. Thor. So right. They all talk about Thor. This Thor. Is not something new.
No. I mean, Thunder is in and of itself neutral and...
right.
But I don't know if it's diverse. I mean, I don't... Lightning and lightning's white. I don't think Thunder has a color. Mm. This is tough. So apparently, I just can't. The email rejected the mural, though that wasn't said explicitly. It said the district would like to see some other options of the mural from the artists so they could review the new concept and ask the student body to vote on it. The staff member also offered an idea to remove the person, Thor, enlarge the hammer, and rotate it so it's hammering the center of the mountain. So basically this mural, which I think is really cool. If you're listening, not watching, it's like this cool mountain. I don't know if that's Mount, it looks like Mount St. Helens. Is that the one that erupted?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it looks like, right? It's got a little chunk out of it.
Sure.
And that would be kind of down there, right?
Yeah, it might be more along the lines, isn't that Greek god? Maybe that would be Mount Olympus.
Okay,
but
Nicole.
I don't know.
Just crap on my dreams.
I don't know.
Anyway,
I don't know.
It's some sort of mountain, and it's got Thor and his little Greek robe, mm-hmm. and he's got his hammer and the lightning coming down into the mountain. Yeah, let's just get rid of Thor. And just leave the hammer floating.
Right.
That's just so stupid. Jason goes on to write, so talking about the students that he spoke to. Tara said she knew something was wrong when they met with district staff, including the equity advancement specialist.
Yeah, right? These are jobs.
These are jobs. Can I get
Stop
that job?
It.
The other elected senior class council members attended as well. Equity department officials had an issue with the image not being racially and gender inclusive, as well as upholding an image of pure colonization. White power, white supremacy, and even going as far as to say that it was alluding to racist anti-black imagery in South. Eva, another student, said they were told, quote, without context, our image could be taken the wrong way, including being seen as an example of white supremacy. Tara noted they were warned to be mindful that the image, despite it not being problematic, is something that could grow to be controversial in the future. By having a fictional, like, Greek god?
Were you not taught about Greek gods? Like, that's supposed to be a pretty common teaching in school. I think probably by sixth grade you know about the Greek gods.
How is it white power and supremacy or alluding to racist anti-black imagery in the South? That mural alludes to racist anti-black imagery.
I don't know, but we are being corrected. Apparently Thor is Nordic, not Greek.
I don't know. Listen, I'm just reading the Jason Rand story.
But regardless, this is a mythical kind
mythical.
Of I mean, what are you supposed to do? White is not allowed anymore? You can't have anything white?
That's what they should just say. White's not allowed.
Right.
White's not right.
Right.
White is not right.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they should say.
That's what they're implying.
Unbelievable.
But that's a lot of jobs that we're paying for to make that decision.
Strip DEI. We're going to talk about that coming up in national news, an effort to do away with DEI for good. Unbelievable. All right. I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark challenge. Why, you say? Well, you need insurance. Why would you not want to make sure you're not paying too much for the insurance that you have, or paying for insurance that, God forbid, you don't even need? Our friend Ben Bailey took the First Mark challenge, and he says, you know, after going through this whole experience, he's a firm believer that reevaluating your insurance should be on your annual to-do list, just like other things that you do every year, like getting a physical.
You know, it's good to, just like you would go in for an annual physical with your primary care physician. You know, you may not have anything wrong, but it's good just to kind of have that, you know, annual check-in. And I think that's what First Mark, you know, the service and the value that they really provide is it helps. It helps you have an understanding of your coverage.
Yeah, and they do that proactively, which when I hit my 1 year with First Mark, they go through everything on their own and then come to you and let you know if there's anything that needs to be changed. So I thought that was really good. Ben and Leslie, when they did the First Mark challenge, they saved $1,500 a year on their insurance. So yeah, it pays to have someone like First Mark in your corner. So take the First Mark challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you and you never pay First Mark for their services. So that's just a no-brainer, if you ask me. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, New York's Russell Sage College is offering a very, very unique course. It is a course that will help you. Why? Why do you include these in here? Why?
Well, I thought this is gonna be a fun discussion about sneezing.
How am I supposed to get through these things without laughing? New York's Russell College is offering a gender-affirming voice course. The gender-affirming voice program. It'll teach students how to cough and sneeze in their preferred gender. It says, this is the course description. We provide participants with the opportunity to explore their voice and communication goals in a safe, welcoming, small group environment. The gender-affirming voice program at Russell Sage is for gender-diverse individuals who seek to modify their voices to match their identities. Starting in the spring semester of 2025, the program will take place on a weeknight on our Albany campus. Program structure. Modeled after the long-standing program at the College of St. Rose, sessions will be 2 hours long. And each semester will include 10 sessions. The program allows participants to explore aspects of voice like pitch, inflection, resonance, articulation, and loudness. Broader aspects of language and communication are also covered, Nicole, stop laughing, with intention to language and nonverbal communication. Finally, we attend to behaviors such as coughing, sneezing, and throat clearing, because these often affect listener perception of gender. First of all, I thought gender was a social construct, so why are you saying that you have to, like, cough like a chick if you want to identify as a chick? Isn't that going against their own sort of ideas of gender being this fluid thing that has no particular look or meaning? Now, Nicole, you said something earlier under your breath that I am offended by. You said you wanted to do this story so you could talk about how I sneeze.
Yeah, your sneezing is very aggressive. Is I'm sure that's not how they're teaching them to sneeze. How do you sneeze? Well, like you try to muffle it.
Achoo. No, I just let it all. I just let it all go out.
It is.
Listen, I have
jarring.
Bad. I have bad allergies. So you're saying that I sneeze like a man?
A little bit.
That's maybe. Offensive. Then I'm going to enroll in a single course at New York's Russell Sage College for their gender affirming voice course, and I'll learn to sneeze like a lady. Does that sound good?
Okay, that sounds good. Did you see that in the class they also teach you gratitude? So that's how you end the class, in gratitude.
For what?
I don't know.
Like, for what?
I don't know. That's just says, what they do.
The voice program includes a variety of activities: check-in and mindfulness, vocal warm-up. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, how now, brown cow.
I'm sure that comes in.
How now? And then small group activities that promote the exploration of voice and communication and gratitude. You know, gratitude's always good. Fine.
It is good. But can you
maybe
imagine,
be grateful for the gender you were born into.
Can you imagine a kid going off to college and your parents are just writing the checks for classes, and then they come back the opposite gender?
Then they come back for Christmas. They're like, give me that ham. Give me that stuff and a gravy.
Pay attention,
you're
people.
Like, you're like, what happened? Oh, I took a class.
How to cough like a man.
All right. Insane news. J.D. Vance, who I wonder, people are saying that he's going to be just selected as Trump's running mate. I just don't think so. I don't think so. I think he needs a woman or someone of color to check all the boxes of Americans these days. But anyway, Senator J.D. Vance has introduced a bill that would dismantle DEI. In fact, it's called the Dismantle DEI Act. It says it would ensure equal protection of the law to prevent racism in the federal government and for other purposes. It may be cited as the Dismantle DEI Act of 2024. It would prohibit diversity, equity, and inclusion practices across the federal government. Now, I think this is interesting. I like that it's being introduced. And you have to think about this. If Donald Trump is elected president, obviously he would sign this. The Republicans already control the House. I think there's a good chance they could get enough votes to pass this. So the question is, can Republicans retake the Senate? So if we're just talking about Republicans retaking the Senate and then we could get a bill through that would dismantle DEI, first of all, that would save a hell of a lot of taxpayer money. And second, it would restore a lot of sanity to this insane country of ours. So I'm all in favor of the Dismantle DEI Act, and we'll monitor this one. But J.D. Vance, I'm curious whether you guys think he'd be a good vice presidential running mate for the president. I just don't think he brings anything to the ticket.
I agree.
What does
he
bring into the ticket?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Just another Trump type, I guess.
Yeah, let's do our daily subscriber show poll really quick before we move on to comments and questions, shall we? So obviously abortion has been a key issue that Democrats just want to harp on to try to scare voters away from choosing a Republican. Even if the Republican has already said, hey, I'm not going to change what voters have codified in the state of Washington. So this has been particularly problematic for Dave Reichert. So Dave Reichert's running for governor, of course, and full disclosure, I'm supporting his campaign. But one of the issues that Bob Ferguson has been relentless about is Dave Reichert is anti-choice. They don't say pro-life because that sounds nice, right? Dave Reichert's anti-choice, and he'll take away a woman's right to choose. And Dave Reichert has always said since the beginning of his campaign, I'm not going to overturn the will of voters. If there is some effort to change abortion law in Washington, it has to go through the voters. That is his position on this. So Dave Reichert, coming to a TV screen near you soon, has paid to run a very brief political ad to counteract some of the attacks from Bob Ferguson. Here it is.
I want you to know where I stand on abortion. As governor, I will not change Washington law on this issue because I do not believe any politician, regardless of personal belief, has the right to make that decision for any woman. My opponent, Bob Ferguson, is trying to spread fear by saying things that I don't believe and will not do.
So very brief and to the point. I like that. I mean, it's also probably like a little cheaper to buy a 15-second ad than a 30-second ad, but it doesn't need to be any more of that. But I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you believe the ad is effective in counteracting the narrative from Bob Ferguson and from Democrats that Dave Reichert will upend women's reproductive rights? Yes or no? Let's check in here on Patreon. Greg says, I like the ad. It makes Dave's position perfectly clear. A lot of you say you do think it's effective. It doesn't need to be any more complicated than that. Andy Silly says it's effective because one of the main components about Dave is that he doesn't talk much on the issues. Saying that he won't let his personal beliefs on abortion interfere with his performance is a standard line that is expected to be expressed. Joan asks the question we all want to know. Why is abortion such a huge issue? The state has so much more wrong with it. Public safety, encampment, garbage everywhere. And that's I think the fundamental issue is it's not an issue that is impacting us to the extent of so many other things. And, you know, I get it. Again, I'm pro-choice up to fetal viability. So I, you know, tend to be in the camp of I'm fine with Washington's law the way that it is. I also like the issue in the hands of states so that you can have Americans who, if they really choose to, can migrate to other states and live in a state that fits their values. I'm totally fine with all of that. So as things are right now, like, fine. And I also agree with Dave that the will of the voters shouldn't be overturned. Republicans don't want Democrats overturning the will of voters and spitting on the initiative process. So why would Dave Ryker do it? But yeah, that's the reason why it's such a big issue is Democrats fearmonger over it. They did it in 2022 to great success. So why wouldn't they do it again when they're facing a legitimate challenger for Bob Ferguson for the governor's office? They don't want to focus on crime. They don't want people talking about homelessness and drug abuse. That's not good for them. They don't have a good track record on that. So they're going to harp on, oh, Trump bad, MAGA, right wing, abortion. That's what they're going to do. And so I think it's a really smart idea for Dave Ryker to get out in front of it and just put his stake in the ground. Because I'd also say Tiffany Smiley didn't do that early enough in her Senate campaign. And Patty Murray spent money all summer before the 2022 election painting Tiffany Smiley as this anti-woman extremist. And the Smiley camp wasn't pushing back against that at all. So Patty Murray defined her before she could define herself. Winton Dillard over on Locals. It's okay, but I don't think this issue is as high on most voters' list of priorities as the real issues of crime and taxes come November. Gotta figure Mr. Reichert is waiting to drop the boom on Mr. Ferguson with the real issues. Dave Ryker, I will say, on his social media accounts has been a little bit more aggressive going after Bob Ferguson. I think that's probably a strategy, is just ratcheting up the aggression. You gotta hit Bob where it hurts, and that's on his record. His record is abysmal. It's abysmal. There's so much there. Todd Welch, it can be effective for those who are independent or on the fence. Dave can then refocus on crime, drugs, taxation, and other issues truly important to Washington. I will just note, I wish I could find it really fast here because I wasn't planning on reading it, but I saw a comment on my Facebook page earlier today from a woman who said, hey, Brandy, can you help me? I want to vote for Dave Ryker, but I need to know what his position is on abortion and whether he'll stand with women's reproductive rights. And so I put the link of Dave's ad in there to answer a question. So there are some people who, for them, that's an issue that really, really matters when they're on the fence. Okay, we'll get to questions and comments coming up next. First, if you're in the market to sell your home, sure, call a few real estate agents. Call the real estate agent that your neighbor's cousin's best friend's second nephew, niece used when they sold their home. Fine. But don't choose one. Don't choose one until you've reached out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Wes has been doing this for a really good time, long time. He knows the market really, really well. When Bryce and Carla decided to sell their home in Bellevue and move to Florida, they said, you know, they reached out to Wes because we talk about him on the show, and they said they were just so impressed with the wealth of knowledge and also kind of his bedside manner.
Just very detail-oriented and never put down our property because you could hear I-90 from our property. And it wasn't the most feng shui, yummy piece of property, and our furniture never showed our house well, our own personal furniture. But he was like, oh yeah, he could see in his mind, this will show after the paint and the staging, this will be a premium property. He could see that, and he didn't let us feel like it was a subpar home the way it was, you know? And others were like, oh, what is going on? We're gonna have to put a water feature on that deck. Because that noise. And I'm like, sorry.
Yeah. So Wes was able to help them sell their home in 7 days for over list price. Now they're living in sunny Florida. So reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, to the comment section we go. Matt Gilbert with a $5 super chat. Claudia learned what happens when you speak out against the state-sponsored religion. Say it with me. The patriarchy wins again. Yeah, so much for women's rights. women's rights matter unless they come in conflict with transgender rights and the rights of biological men to rape women in prison settings, to compete against women in sports, then the patriarchy wins, as Matt points out. Matthew Cook, schools of social work are some of the most radical on college campuses. Claudia was guilty of thinking critically. None of that at university. Family Win says, this angers me on so many levels. Let's see how we can help Claudia. What can we do to help her, Brandy? I'm not sure. I'm assuming Joan Mell has taken her case pro bono, isn't she? We'll have to ask. Maybe we can ask if Joan, if she needs help with.
But let the university know how you feel.
Yeah, let the university know how you feel. If you're giving them money, consider not giving them any money and letting them know, here's why we're not giving you any money anymore. I know that happened a lot at UW during the protests. People sent me emails saying, we don't give UW a lot, but we stopped giving them what we were giving them. We've taken them out of our endowment or whatever it is, and we sent them an email about it. That stuff really, really, really matters. Tara MC, good for her for going with who she is, for standing up against the crazy, especially when others won't have it in them to do the same, but wish they could. May she find peace. Sheila Levine, UW has been a total disappointment lately. I'm becoming a Cougars fan now. My husband will like to hear that. Go Cougs. H, why does the media and our local government ignore the gang problem? They do the same thing here in Everett. There is gang graffiti all over people's fences. Yeah, oh no. Then it's, you know, well, I'll just clean it, just paint over it. That's fine. No big deal. It's really insane. It's like, this isn't a gun problem. It's a gang problem. It's a criminal lifestyle problem, and it's never going to be solved. That guy who had that gun up on Aurora Avenue that we played the clip of, that's not a legal firearm. That's not a legal firearm. So, and even if it were a legal firearm, I guarantee he didn't have it legally. So it's just insane. Gender class. Jeremy Hubble. Hi, Jeremy. Said, just when I think we as a society have jumped the shark, Nicole digs up this insert swear jar word here. The gender voice class. I know, right? I'm just like, man. So sometimes I'm focused on one part of the show and our lead story, and then Nicole puts these little goodies in there, and then I'm like, wow, that's a special kind of crazy today. Oh, you wait till our closing sanity check. Okay, good questions and comments today per the usual. Let's just do it then. Let's round out the craziness on the show today with our closing sanity check. If there were any doubt in your mind that some of this radical gender ideology is really just mental illness, here is Exhibit A.
I am a robot or android of sorts. I am not human, and I lack the ability to fully act human, because since I spawned in this human body, I have not been able to access the internet and download new ways of acting. I have transcripts for every way of acting and reacting to different things, and I lack new ones due to not being able to connect to the internet anymore. So there, I cannot always react accordingly to new things, because I cannot look it up anymore and do not know how to act and react.
Sounds like her parents took her internet access away, which, under the circumstances, was probably a wise decision. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your continued commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you have not signed up to support the show already, please do so. Join our growing community of Team Sanity for just $5 a month. You can sign up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.